This is the Talking Split Podcast.
Welcome, coaches. I am Rob Calder, the Coach Development Coordinator at Basketball Victoria. This is the Talking Split Podcast. We have been upgraded from the Gaze Room to the Basketball Victoria Boardroom. That's when you know you have made it on the big time. With me so far, I have Zoe Carr, the High Performance Coach for the Victoria Country Women. Welcome, Zoe.
Thank you for having me. Exciting day.
It is an exciting day. And with us, a special guest. It's been a long time coming. Long time listener, first time podcast attendee, we'll call it, in person. Dom Lanossio. Welcome, Dom.
Thanks, Robbie. You've actually just stolen my intro line.
Yeah, apologies.
Go with, long-time listener, first-time participant, but, you know.
It's okay. So, for those of you that may not be aware, Dom Lanossio is a returning Victoria Metro head coach for the under-16 men. What were your years in the head coaching chair?
17 to 19.
Yep.
Yep.
Enjoyable times?
Yeah, great times. Great times. We won't talk about the first one, but 18, 19, really good. Yeah. And, of course, very lucky to have been under your tutelage for the 2 years prior as an assistant coach too. So that's a nice little run.
We only talk about one of those years as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's,
right. You know, there's a couple. Yeah, 16, really enjoyed 16. 14, 15, not so much. But that's okay. Different problems. So coming back into the Vic Metro program, I suppose. So for transparency, we're doing this on a Saturday. So it's not the normal Tuesday recording. And Saturday of the Labor Day weekend? Is that what we are? Yeah, I'm losing track of public holidays.
I don't know
holidays.
What a weekend is.
Yeah, so it's we're
not
losing,
familiar with that word.
We're losing track of everything. But this is under-16 combine day. So the top, 24-ish kids from country and metro come together, play a series of games against each other during the course of the day, and the under-16 state team gets picked out of this. So that's what this day will be. We've got Dom at the start of the day, where he's probably a little bit fresher than what he's going to look like after, six games of going back and forth and letting kids know and breaking hearts and elating kids over the course. Like, how do you prepare for this, Dom?
Yeah, great day. Awesome day. Really, really exciting part of the process, I should say. We're at 26 kids. We've got two kids not on the floor, so we'll bring three teams of eight of the 24 on the floor today. And come away at the end of it with a 2023 under-16 Vic Metro State team, which is pretty exciting. Of course, the country athletes will do the same or do similar. Preparing for the day, really, we sort of made sure our cuts were done so that we were able to bring our 26 athletes together last weekend and sort of get them organised for what today will look like and start to do a little bit of the teaching and a bit of feedback as part of that process. Those who have been involved in the state process or those who have been around a state process or know that there's not a huge amount of teaching that's happening in the early trials as we kind of manage the numbers and work our way through. It's really about seeing which kids can play or have the athletic profile or have the skill set to be able to sort of go through to the next round. And then it's been really refreshing actually to sort of be able to coach and get feedback from the athletes and give them feedback and be able to work through that over the last session that we had. So then preparing for today, I should say, is about making sure we're as organised as we possibly can be. We've got a pretty clear set of criteria that we're using to base our selections on this year. It's something that we have iterated, if you like, from the past and my past experience, having those conversations and trying to keep things as closed, if you like, as possible from one another. So having conversations conceptually as a coaching group and selection panel about what we're looking for, but leaving kind of athletes' names out of it has been a real push for us this year, which I think has been a really cool way to go about it so that we know when we come together in our selection conversations over the day today and we get that feedback about how athletes are responding in game and otherwise, that we're sort of clear in our direction about what we're headed, where we're headed and what we're looking for. Yeah.
It's interesting you've left names out, and we're obviously not going to name anyone on this podcast because that would be grossly unfair. But it is, how's that gone? Like, not naming athletes as such, like, has that removed an element of bias, I suppose, that you get influenced by someone else's perception of what they're saying?
Yeah, and I think too, the big thing for us has been that we're talking about for us it's Vic Metro, but as a part of the Victorian sort of brand of basketball and what we want it to look like. And so as we kind of understand what our pieces look like, we're not then looking at trying to fit round peg, square hole kind of scenario. We're actually really making sure that we're able to adapt that or shape that to the athletes that are in front of us. It's been hard to stop yourself from saying a kid's name when you're trying to give an example or otherwise. You know, it's been hard to kind of try and pull ourselves back from that. But The coaching staff have done a great job in sort of trying to make that adjustment.
Yeah, awesome. I'm not going to have you name your criteria that you're going through, like there's some IP in that, and you know, obviously do your thing. But at any stage, is there someone that doesn't sort of fit the criteria that's made it to this point where it's like, I don't know where they fit, but they're just really good at basketball, so we're going to take them anyway? Like, is that a situation that happens?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I think that you're always like selection guidelines, not selection rules, right? Like if you have a rule, there's always going to be someone who breaks it that you really need to try and have involved in some way. But we've got four pretty clear guidelines, if you like, around that. And part of it is around, I don't mind sharing.
Okay, we'll just go for it. No worries. You
know, people can contest it. A little bit around positional play. So focus on where we kind of see them playing at a national level, which is a distinct nationals level, sorry, which is a distinct change potentially from where they play on a Friday night or how they play on a Friday night, which is really important. And then some athletic profile stuff too. And then trying to forecast a little bit about which kids would be, which athletes I should say, would be at that the next level or maybe put themselves in contention to be able to go to an identification camp at the COE or otherwise, and trying to understand a little bit what that next level is looking for too. Like, obviously, we're here. We're going to Perth to win a national championship, but we have a responsibility, I think, to try and make sure that we're putting the very best sort of profile athletes, if you like, in front of our green and gold coaches too.
So what I'm hearing in all of that is you don't just sit there and scour Play HQ on the Friday night for whoever scored the most amount of points in their VJBL team.
It's safe to say that hasn't happened. Yeah. As part of our talent identification process, Robbie, no. But, I mean, it is one metric, right? And and all metrics should be considered in with the appropriate weighting. Yeah.
That is tough, though, like to be fair. Like it's one of the pushbacks I feel like we get a lot with state teams. Oh, they scored this amount of points in this game and then they played against the other player that you've actually selected. They had this. And, I mean, as you say, like the scoring stuff is nice. Like you genuinely have to take it into consideration, but can they score really well in a VJBL competition versus can they score well at a national championships? Not the same thing, it'd be fair.
Yeah, definitely not the same level. No, and not the same scoring either. Yep. Really that to score at a national championships, to be a consistent scorer at national championships, I think you have to be able to score at all three levels, right? And so you have to be able to do that. How many times do we see an athlete go for sort of 20 points on a Friday night with 0 3-point makes and low free throw attempts? Like that's, I think that's something that starts to disappear as you get the physicality and otherwise. I think the other thing too is the VJBL game on a Friday night has real merit, obviously. Victoria Metro has been successful in that space partly because I'm sure of the development that occurs there. But players play out of position at the next level. And so the kid that's running a wing on a Friday night, that he or she has to be a ball-handling guard when it gets to the national level because the athletic profile says we need to invest in this space. And there's always one of my great mentors, Scotty Christensen, always says, well, there's always space for one pixie. but outside of that, take two at your own peril kind of thing. So,
and it's really important, I think, people get an understanding of it so much deeper than just pick these kids, and at the end of any selection, there's going to be, there's obviously subjectivity. There's what you're looking for, how you coach, who, relates to that, responds to that, who doesn't, all that sort of thing that then adds to and also then opens the door, I guess, for criticism as well. And that's something then, like, how do you manage that when, I guess, that comes in, given you've done this before?
I think in the past I have been, I think one of the self-reflections would be that I've probably been a bit short-sighted with my selection process in the past, especially early in my head coaching kind of opportunity. It was very much about the now and about trying to put the group together that could win an under-16 national championship. And sometimes that comes at the cost, right, of picking the athlete that could go and that could compete and that could be there that also has the potential to go to the next level. And it definitely leaves you open to the criticism of others. I think that as a coach, you have to be comfortable with your decision process. And if you're comfortable with your decision process, then you know that you've got that to go back to. There's always going to be loud voices that disagree with you. And the loud ones are the ones that are nice to handle, right? They're the ones that come up and say, like, hey, talk to us about this election, or, you know, what happened here? They're the ones that you get to have a conversation with. It's the quiet ones that don't necessarily have that conversation with you. That can be a bit tougher to kind of navigate. But you just got, I think, trust in the process that you've gone through, having clarity about that, owning that process, making sure it's yours and it's not somebody else's as the head coach is really important. Like, I think working with Bestie to work through our kind of selection process has been something we've needed to be on the same page with, and he's been great in sort of helping me understand the change in Vic Metro philosophy and ideas and thinking since I was last involved. And that then helps alleviate any criticism, right, that you hear too, that that you sort of know that your process was thorough, you know that you did the right thing, and you feel confident with those selections. And at the same time, knowing that sometimes you probably get it wrong, right, and that's okay too. Just roll with it.
Well, and especially with 16s, when it feels like the process goes for an eternity, you know, it basically starts in January and the tournament's not until July. So many things happen. But even between now and July, yep, you know, there's always one or two kids that you've maybe picked as an emergency that shoot up to, you know, 6'6" or and beyond. And you think, oh, my goodness, if you're just that in March, this is a different story. But it's really interesting you talk about sort of short-sighted vision and those sort of things with selection. And I'll, without notice, I suppose I'll throw to you, Rob, on...
This is never good.
on... your selections when you went through and you had your 3 years, and the difference between your first 2 years and then obviously the third year results from 16s to 18s, talking about what Dom's talking about.
Yeah, and I think we've spoken about it a little bit on the pod before. I probably haven't gone super in depth with it, but I know...
Because it causes him to squeeze up into the fetal
absolutely
position.
Like, I've already got the shakes. It's like the first year... I was a head coach. We didn't have combine. So we announced our team selection at MSAC to the kids, and it was just like it was, I suppose, like every other process where you just gradually cut down over the course. And then it was sort of identified that it's like, yeah, some of these kids are great training players, but they're not necessarily gamers, so to speak. And you get really familiar, I think, with your own sort of concepts. And it's like, oh, they're guarding this offense really well. Well, they should. They know it. So, you know, they're finding ways to shortcut defensively what you're trying to get out of it. So... the combine came in for my second year when we came through. And to be fair, and this is not a criticism of anyone, but we came to combine that first year and just smoked country. Mm-hmm. Like, it was like they were blowout games. Like, they were a good 40 to 50 points in every one of those six games that we played. And it's a testament to the depth that country have got now, that they won't be the same now. Yeah. Like, they'll be a lot closer this time around. But I know it's a lot easier to pick your team, or I found it a lot easier to pick your team playing against someone you haven't seen before, because that's what you're going to get at nationals. It's what you go away and you see. I absolutely picked for the long term my first year. There was no doubt I had an eye on what was going to be the progression. Now, some of those did and didn't work out, and, you know, that's the raffle you take, obviously. The second year, I probably split the difference a little bit. Like, there was a little bit of long-term sort of forecasting there, but there were certainly the short-term kids. And ironically, the kids that I would have said were the short-term kids in 16s have actually gone on to progress pretty well. Like, like, I look at, and we can name them, they're old enough now, like Kelly Lepepe, who I would have thought was the ultimate short-term under 16 nationals kid.
Just the find a way kid.
Yeah, like, has had one heck of a college career to this point, like at LMU.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you were with us, Dom. Like, he was a ripping kid. But
phenomenal. Like, phenomenal member of the team. But he very much was like an under 16 Vic Metro player from the time, right? Like, that'll be his ceiling, and that's where he is. And he smashed it.
Found a way. Yep. And the other one, Tyler Robinson.
Yep.
Where you probably sit there and say, geez, I don't know how this kid translates athletically, like IQ off the charts. Like, the intelligence level of that kid was phenomenal. He picked up our offense before we put the offense in. Like, he was that good with what he was doing. And he's the sort of kid as well that if he could find a way to shortcut defensively, he would shortcut defensively. But it didn't come from a point of laziness. It came from a point of just super blow high up IQ. Like, he was just that sort of kid. So I look at it and go, well, okay, they were probably my two short-term selections with that. And they've worked out to be the long-termers. Like, go figure. Like, that doesn't make definitely a lot of sense. And then that last year, I've said it before, I got selfish and just picked all the short-term kids. And it's like I had two silver medals, and you know, whilst I don't necessarily dislike the silver, actually I do dislike the silver medals. I prefer them to be gold medals, but that's okay. It is one of those things though where it's like, well, we probably picked more short-term kids in that one. I don't think we've really had anyone progress from that group, like beyond Kobe Williamson, who's obviously moved on, but he was an emergency with that team. To be fair, like he wasn't picked in the original group, and he was probably one of those ones that we got to combine. It's like, geez, we like a lot about him. He's probably just not quite there yet.
Yep.
But you know, he's continued to work and progress, and he's been really good. And I mean, I suppose I'm interested in that sort of thing. Like, how do you work out which kid will be the long term kid in this? Like, how have you gone about that?
I don't know if we necessarily get it right all the time, right?
Yeah, and clearly not. Yeah. Like, I butchered that.
I think there's something that we've seen about, maybe came out of soccer, which is like the notion, if you get talent identification right 20% of the time, you're a genius kind of at it, you know, in that sort of, especially at this sort of 14, 15-year-old kind of level.
Somewhere Mike McHugh's ears are ringing.
Yeah, they are.
Ringing.
Yeah. how do you, like, what are we looking for? I guess, like, IQ is one element of it. Athletic package and potential is one part. I mean, that's the hard part, right? You're forecasting stuff that may change or may not change, you know, in different ways. And so, we're looking at understanding of the game, or like coachability probably is one element of it. Can you take feedback on? Can you then try and apply the feedback? And especially those long-term kids, they're less likely to be able to execute the feedback, I would suggest, in immediacy, but they will be the first to attempt to execute the feedback. And that's probably because they're developing skill package or developing athletic package or otherwise, you know. And then looking at the skill level that they do have. So, you know, Coops is sitting somewhere or driving in his way to SBC at the moment, hoping somebody talks about shooting as the master skill, right? But like the kid who can stick it from three, like that kid automatically has like a higher level of long-term potential if they can shoot it. There are some athletes that definitely came through my experience, my first one in 2017 when we went to Perth, kid that was, he shot it like above 40% from three for the tournament. And you know a kid's a good shooter when the floor wipers are like celebrating the three before it's come out of his hands, you know, like the local kids that are in the corner sweeping the floors that are like, yep, that's money. And like he goes away to a national camp and didn't progress, you know, after that. And that's cool, right? Like that's part of the process, I think. So yeah, I'd be looking at IQ capacity to be able to try and attempt to implement the feedback, so they're processing and listening and understanding to what's being delivered to them, and then their athletic profile, I think, is other three kind of core elements.
And that's the hardest part is getting this stuff right. But I do genuinely believe though, like I used to, because I was one of these people that would sit there before I went to a national championships and like, how did they leave that kid out? Yeah. Like that makes no sense to me. Like I see that kid, you know, once a month or whatever it is, at, you know, either ITC, what I was back in the day, or you catch him on a Friday night game and they just look like a machine. Like it's like that kid is going to progress. And then you see the state team selections come in. It's like, what? Like, how has this happened? And like, we've all seen the online entertainment that can potentially come, we'll put. But like even in the like the Facebook posts that go up from BV, 99% of the congratulations and tagging a player, which is fantastic. Awesome. And then there's always one, how did you leave this player out? And it's like, come on. Like, and then you look at who they are and it's like, well, actually, have you sat in this chair before? Because this is the biggest thing. I was one of those, not that I posted, like I was always very mindful of that.
I like how you pointed at me when you
said
that.
Yeah, no.
Like I was going to come down hard on you.
I just had a feeling you may have called me out on that. It's like I never posted or anything like that, but I certainly had my opinions. And that's the difficult part is that once I got involved in it, I understood a little bit more, okay, that's why that kid doesn't translate to the next level. Like you'd see that kid that, as you say, like it just goes out and just dominates on a Friday night, and it's like, yeah, they can't do that. Like that might be the 5'5" buzzsaw point guard that can just get wherever they want, whenever they want on a Friday night game. And then they go up a level, and then it's like, well, okay, that's now a 6'1" point guard that's defending you, that's just as physically strong, that's just as physically athletic. It doesn't translate necessarily, and until you've been there, you probably don't realise that.
Yeah, definitely. Or it's the like the 7-footer that's coming down from Queensland South that's going to meet you at the rim. That's not the 6'3" slab in the middle of the VJBL zone, right? Like that's the other part about it too, is that even when you just look, the best part about playing against country, I think now, is that we get to see those different styles of athletes and different levels of athletes that we don't see on a, you know, the athletes don't see, like we spoke, like you spoke about before, Rob. Yeah, definitely. I think that's a core part about it, and would encourage anyone who has an interest in it to put their hand up and come down, like just come to a practice session. Just reach out to Bestie or to, well, for me it's Bestie, but you know, to Zoe or to whoever the high performance coach might be, and say, hey, can I check out a state practice session? I don't know if there's any, like, I can't promise that you'll come and be wowed by what the practice session is, right? Like, it's not groundbreaking stuff. But you'll be able to see the level that's required when you have a program that runs 15 deep, 16 deep.
And it's just not easy. Like, there's a lot of people to manage within that, because whilst you have 15, 16 athletes, you also have 15, 16 lots of parents.
Yep.
Then you have to deal with potentially the club coach, the association director of coaching in there as well, where you're like...
The trainer.
The personal trainer on the side that has their own thoughts on what they need to do to progress. And I'll give you the tip, it's not stationary ball handling. That is rarely the thing that needs to be done.
Sorry. We don't need 8 crossovers in the one spot?
We do not. We still need dots on the ball at the end of their workout session. But it's an area that we have to be super mindful of too, that it's not just you turn up and you coach a team and this is your offense and this is what it's going to look like too. Like, I mean, I'm spitballing here, Dom, but I'm assuming you haven't come in with the thought of, I'm running this offense, so I need to pick kids for this offense. And if the best kid doesn't suit that offense, well, I'm not taking the best kid.
Yeah, like guidelines, not rules, right? Yeah, absolutely. We certainly have a structure that we think is our base, kind of where we'll build from, but that can't be limiting, because if it's not working for the group of athletes, then it's not working for the group of athletes, right? And then, you need to be adaptable, definitely, yeah.
It's a tough spot. How many, and you don't have to give names, we're at this point where you've had how many trials, probably 5 or 6 at this point?
Yeah, yep. 5 trials, 4 trials, yeah.
How many kids would you say are like more in than out at this stage when you look at team selection?
It's a thanks for putting me on the spot there, Rob.
Yeah,
No, look.
Remember, it can be edited out.
Yeah.
So
yeah, excellent. Well, good. In that case, genuinely, I think we're at a point where we probably have a very small number of players that we are more comfortable with, but that is definitely not putting them, what I would say, like above the line. They're not in the team, but they've sort of demonstrated over that time that they have a role to play that could be something that could translate to a national championships level. Yeah, definitely.
And then the dynamics of, you know, can we take all of those players? Do they work in with each other? That's a different beast altogether, and you might find some of it out today, because they might be on similar teams. But like, I know when we've done the combine in the past, there have absolutely been kids that have played themselves into a spot on this day.
Yep, 100%.
Like, I had one kid completely out, and I won't name him because it's not fair, I had one kid completely out, and after the first game, it's like, we have made a monumental error. If we are seriously leaving this kid out, we have to have them in. It just happens. Yep. Like, sometimes kids are sort of big game moments, and they turn up for this type of stuff. Other kids will probably go into their shell. How do you balance the kids' like mental state, I suppose, when they come into this tournament but weekend?
Yeah, I think this is the first time that I've been to a combine where we're going to have a practice session before. We're going to treat it like we would a national shoot around. So we're not kind of training them necessarily this morning, but we'll just do some shooting and some run throughs and stuff. And big part about, I guess, this is part about being true to who you are as a coach, right? I'm sure every coach will approach it differently, but big part about, I think, this morning will be for us that we're going to play some games to start our shoot around, because the boys are going to be nervous and we want them to kind of settle. And the best way that we think we can do that is to take them, totally forget about sort of the environment where they're in. And so we'll play some like Golden Child, for instance, at the end of practice today, and we'll do some ball tag to warm up and try and change it a bit that way and try and break that kind of nervous energy, if you like, that kind of exists in the gym. And then it's constant check-ins, right? Like I think Lono talks about from the Gold Coast Suns about the flight path conversations. Doesn't necessarily need to be like sitting down one-to-one and having a face-to-face conversation. That can be really confrontational for athletes of any age, but in particular this age. And so that just walking between the courts as we kind of change sides and touching base with them, or as they walk up to the canteen to make a really smart nutritional choice today, you know, just having those conversations with them at that point in time as well, or encouraging them to get outside and get some vitamin D today and make sure that they break up the cycle of being in the gym. That's a big part, I think, about how you manage that sort of mental state. And we've been really explicit with the boys in the last session that they have done everything to this point that they could do to put themselves into selection, and now they have one more hurdle, I guess, to jump. So they should trust the fact that they already know what's required. They know the level that they need to be able to get to. They know that they're capable of it. That's why they're here. And they should trust themselves in kind of working through that. You just, again, with anything as it comes to confidence, otherwise you can only try and influence, right? You're trying to influence it in the positive way. You can't necessarily control it, and to think otherwise would be a bit of a misstep.
But. Well, and on those sort of things too, that comes into play as well. If this is an overwhelming environment to the point where they can't perform, what's nationals going to be?
Yep.
You know, that's 10 times, if not 100 times, yep, more than what this weekend is. So those sort of things, they're the things you need to know. That's why I think this setup is actually really good for to help coaches with selection.
Yeah, definitely. And it's great. Like, we have on our staff, we have two coaches that haven't been to a nationals before and two coaches that have. Jared was an assistant last year with Scotty, is an assistant again this year. And so to have that, like, to give coaches the experience about what it looks like too, and the notion of what's required, that, you know, you can have senior coaching experience, you could be involved in, you know, BV pathway stuff right the way through, but it's a different entity, that tournament play intensive 10 days kind of scenario. Try and get some element of that, of being in the gym and watching six games in a day, you know, and then being able to, like, function at the end of it, yeah, and try and pick a team. You know, that's a skill. It's a skill you have to try and develop, I think, as coaches as well.
And you've given I'm going to assume you've given the athletes some fairly decent feedback to this point of what's expected from them today to make the, like, if you want to make this team, we need to see A, B, and C from you, and sort of left it with them from that point. Is that how it's worked?
Yeah, we've been really kind of even more basic than that, I think, yep, to be perfectly honest, Robbie. Like, we've said, like, we have our structure. We want you to be able to find what you can get from within our structure at the offensive end, but we need you to guard. And if you're not at a position where, like, you can guard at that next level and you get found out at that next level, then unless it's like a technical flaw that we can try and think we can coach out and fix, then or help fix or help address, I should say, then, you know, that's going to be like limiting for you in part of this process. And yeah, they've responded really, really well, really, really well to that. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. And obviously 16s being the youngest group where you can obviously represent your state, parents are playing a bigger part in this age group, I'd suggest. Like, and I don't know, when we went through it way back, it was always, you talk to the parents as well.
Yep.
Like, prepare your child for one of three scenarios: in the team, out of the team, an emergency. And they're going to get that because, and again, for those that may not be aware, they get told today if they're in or out. Like, I know the 18s, they were phone calls. I think, yeah, is that right, Zoe? Yeah. So phone calls with how they got notified. This one's face-to-face, which is a little bit confronting for a lot of kids that maybe haven't had to deal with, like, the highly emotional, you know, roller coaster that they go through. And we've seen it over the course that a lot of these kids that are still around at this stage have probably made everything they've tried out for to this point. Like, they make their club first team, they make SDP, they potentially make, like, the underscore 12 SSV team or whatever that was as well at the time. Mm. Like, this is probably the first time they might miss out on something. Like, how do you deliver feedback afterwards? Like, because they're going to request it. Like, yep. And it's only fair that they get it, but how do you deliver that to them?
I'm going to defer to a high performance coach for that one. We'll definitely compile the feedback today. Yeah, and it'll come in like this is what we thought you did a really good job of. Here's the positives from it. Here's a couple of things that we want you to try and improve on for next time. And that goes to all athletes from emergency to those who get cut. So obviously bringing 26, we'll have 10 that make the team. Between 5 or 6, I think, somewhere around there, we'll end up with emergencies. And then, so there's 9 kids, 10 kids potentially who come away from today with nothing. And so, yeah, we'll definitely manage that feedback. The parents I haven't necessarily had as much involvement with the parents this time around as what I have in the past. I think that's by design from BV in terms of how it's been approached. But I guess those conversations will happen, right? So you sort of, mum and dad, I guess, know that, or they know about that concept. So they've had to deal with it for the last 5 trial sessions, right? Like, excuse me. They've had kids, and when we speak to the boys before we've announced the selections for the successful candidates, athletes coming through, is that the notion that tomorrow morning you'll front up Sunday morning and go to practice with the teammate that's been cut. last night. So what are you going to do? How are you going to carry yourself? How are you going to empathize with them? And at the same time, if you are cut, when you go to practice the next morning, are you prepared to champion your mate and your teammate that got made it through to the next round? Because if you're not prepared to do that, then that again is an attribute of an athlete, high performance athlete, that we would expect you to be able to sort of build and be a part of. So we've had those pretty explicit conversations with them in the past, which has been part of it. But yeah, feedback wise, I'm afraid to use
that. Yeah, so before we deliver the team, obviously today, we assemble the parents and we tell them who's made the team first. That's a really big part of starting the feedback process, because we then get to explain, yes, feedback is available. One of the things I often say, which can come across a bit confronting, but is you don't need to tell us your child is upset when you request that feedback. We know. Like, we're not in this to cut kids. We're not, you know, Homer just cutting kids left and right. We sit in these rooms. I'd love to be able to one day have recordings of in the rooms to show people what the coaches actually go through. They don't enjoy. They enjoy getting their team. They don't enjoy what they have to do to get it. And so we don't need the, you know, I'm dealing with an inconsolable child. She's going to quit. She's going to... We know, right? So the approach is really important. Secondly, with what to keep in mind is there's on average about a 40% turnover between 16s and 18s teams. So just because you're not making this group doesn't mean you're not moving forward. But from a country perspective, the feedback is requested. We compile it in writing and it gets sent to them so they can keep it. Then if they don't understand, they can go to their hub lead. And if that still isn't getting through, then they can come to the HPC and we'll guide them through it. One thing we won't do, though, is discuss any other child. So one year I had a beautiful email of comparative stats from country champs. That's not going to get discussed at all in any feedback. The feedback will be specific to the athlete in question, and that is the only conversation that they'll have. We're not going to, again, this might come across confronting, but after years of having to deal with some of the aggression and emotion, this is where we've got to. We're not going to justify our selection. All we're here to do is try and help your child make it the next time. And so here's your feedback of the areas of improvement. Also what you do well. I think that's important to make sure that, yeah, okay, you've missed this team, but there are still these elements that you do well. Here's where you need to improve to give yourself the best chance on the next go around of making a team.
Yep. There's a pick 8 in the NBA draft that didn't make a top age 16 state team or a bottom age 18 state team. The bottom age 18s one.
Who's the 16s?
The bottom age 18s one doesn't get talked about. I don't know why. But, like, pretty handy career pathway after that, right? And after persisting and saying, like, nah, stuff this, I'm going to make sure I'm the best player that I could possibly be, is now an all-star or has played at all-star weekend, sorry, I should say. Like, that's just, you know, if you want an example of keep working at your game, keep developing your game, keep investing in yourself, because it's not necessarily the right now. But, yeah, bottom age 18s as well.
Just throwing it out there.
Yeah.
No, no, look. To be fair, I didn't pick him bottom eight 16s, but he was miles away from it at that stage. So it is one of those areas too where I think the parental support around it is actually really vital for our athletes. Like, I know that the players that have been not selected previously, the ones – like, I actually had a parent before the team was picked once, Kaplan's, I don't want you to pick my child. They need humbling. It's like, well, I kind of feel like that's your job. It's not my job to not
pick them. They've
probably
tried, though.
Yeah, like it's,
you know, they keep making things.
Yeah. So. I'm the last saving grace, potentially, to keep the kid with the feet on the ground. But it's like, well, we need them. Like, we have to pick this player because we have to have them involved here. You know, that's a difficult part of the process, too. And as it turns out, we ended up picking them and they actually had a pretty good national. So it was okay in that space. But there's an element, too, of the support is not just for the athlete, unfortunately, because we end up having to support the parent through it as well, because, again, all the eggs have been in that basket. So I think it's valid, the non-comparison of why did this player make it over this player. That's not really what we're here for. It's just, look, where did you maybe not quite meet the criteria that we were setting out.
Absolutely. That parent conversations in the car ride home, like, obviously are the most important ones, right? And I think the big thing to be able to be, I would encourage parents to kind of think, obviously coming from an education background, this the same kind of conversations I guess we have with our parents at school level too, is that to hear them, like to hear their kid be upset and understand that they're upset and it's because they cared, because they're invested in it, that's why they're upset, and that's a good thing. And to allow them the space to vent, and you can validate the fact that they're upset, you know, like, yeah, I hear you, man. Like, yeah, that's tough. It's tough to be cut, like, you know. But at the same time, you should be super proud of the effort that you put on the floor. And if you're proud of your effort that you walked away from, and you know there's nothing more that you could have done in that scenario, then so be it, mate. Let's keep moving forward with it. And then the other complexity, I guess, like we spoke about before, of the kids who are in the team managing their club coach involvement or their trainer involvement or whatever it might be, then the kids who get cut as well who don't make the team, encouraging their club coaches to understand the feedback or to ask questions about the feedback and to then have those conversations and to be able to sort of work through that, I think is so important. Is the it can be quite detrimental if a kid goes back to their club land or goes back to school basketball or wherever it might be and they're told, well, they just got it wrong, right? Mm-hmm. Like then you know, you just keep working at what we've been working at and they've just got it wrong. Like you have to kind of understand all of the feedback and take on all of the voices and understand that, and then pick and choose which ones you'd like to sort of work with as an athlete from there. But all of those stakeholders, if you like, for lack of a better phrase, be invested in terms of what the feedback is and validate those feelings. Yeah, absolutely. You get 24 hours to be upset. And then after that time to move on. Let's get to our next challenge.
Seems a bit bleak way to sort of end it, but this is actually a really exciting day. Like, this is probably one of my favourite days on the calendar. When we look at it over the course of it, we get to see the Metro kids come together probably for the first time. Like, there's a lot of kids that have obviously gone to club championships and played against each other. Like, I know one of the years we had, Don, we had a real divide between two clubs. Yep. That just genuinely hated each other.
Yep.
So it was like, well, how's this going to go? And they ended up being best mates by the end of the tournament. Like, you know, it does come together really well. And I suppose for the country kids too, Zoe, like, they haven't necessarily had this same type of process like you, and we'll talk a little bit with Matt about it, what they go through, but because they have such a different process where they come from Southern Cross and Country Cup, this is the first time we're seeing any of these athletes together. So it's going to be disjointed and terrible, but that's okay. That's what the training session's for, to try and get everyone on the same page. But it's actually a really fun day. So as much as we may sit here and say, gee, this is really hard, this is the most exciting day for me.
Oh, sorry. I didn't go for it. But like, yeah. 2023 state teams pick today. Like, yep. That is awesome. And there are 10 athletes who are going to be over the moon about the fact that they just made the team. And there'll be 5 athletes who'll be pretty stoked to be in emergency or around the mark, I'm sure, as well, right? Like, that's a pretty good percentage. And as a coaching group, so awesome to be able to have the opportunity to be on the floor and coach them in a game scenario, which we haven't been able to do up to this point. And fantastic to see how they respond to that. And then, really encourage everyone who wants to be involved in 2024 or beyond to reach out and to start touching base with their high performance coach area so that they can come down and see it, and then in 2024 get down to the combine. You know, we've got Monday off, so no excuse now. Yeah, right?
Give up a day in the gym. I think it's like 24 degrees and sunny today, and we'll be here until 7:30 tonight, give or take, by the time everything's gone through. But that's the fun part of it.
Absolutely. Like, no better day to be in the gym, right?
Exactly.
And 24 and sunny outside.
Yeah. Woo-hoo. You wouldn't do it if it wasn't enjoyable. But
that's it.
I mean, we haven't spoken about it yet, but it's that history part. Like, a lot of these kids now are going to be part of a very big Basketball Victoria family, obviously, which they've probably been a part of to this point, but state teams. Like, you look at a lot of the kids that have gone through previously, and it's like, wow, I own a little bit of that history as well, which is super cool, I think, for a lot of the kids. So,
at the end of our last campaign, at the start of our last campaign, they produced a booklet at the singlet presentation that had every player, or most players, I should say, that had worn that number when they'd gone away to nationals. And to see those kids sitting there and being like, the country kids sitting there being like, Delvedova wore that number, that jersey that I'm going to put on, or Creek, or, and for the women, like, whoever it was that they sort of were able to say, oh, well, like Annalie Maley or
Zoe Carr.
Well, I was trying to stretch for a name there, so without going to you. So apologies for that one. But, Genero Haight, like to see, you know, who to see the, those names in front of them. That's so awesome. So, yeah, they're part of a very special, well, in the boys' side of the program, a very special brotherhood, very special sisterhood now. And that's really exciting for them to be a part of too, which is cool.
It is. Dom, thanks very much for your time. I know this is a stressful day and we've got you in at the crack of dawn to jump into this one. So I appreciate that. We will have you back on the podcast to talk about your actual coaching pathway at some stage because it's a super interesting one, I think, and especially blending it with your education background, like that junior level, the senior level, the state team level. I think it's a really interesting one and articulate yourself very well. So you're already above the level of the podcast. So it's always nice to bring other people come in. Yeah. So good luck today, though.
Appreciate it.
It'll be a lot of fun.
Awesome. Thanks, though.
The plan is flawless. The stakes are high. The only problem? It's for 3 days only at City Mazda's Trilogy Sale Event. With three deals across 3 days, get a steal of a drive-away deal on the entire new and demo Mazda range. Make your move. City Mazda's Trilogy Sale Event is on now. Get in, get out, get Zoom Zoom. Love my city, love my city Mazda. Conditions apply, LMCT 11621.
And welcome back to the Talking Split podcast. We are in between games at the moment and we have the head coach of the Victoria Country Women, Matt Holmes, in the hot seat. Welcome, Matt.
Thank you, Rob.
It's been a long day, it'd be fair to say at this point. You've seen a lot of the girls play. Just going to go back a step. You haven't seen a lot of these kids since Country Cup. What was the other tournament? Southern Cross Challenge, like way back. How have they come into this where you've got to now make a selection on them?
It's a tough gig for them because they've not played together collectively as a group ever. So 15s and 16s are separate tournaments. So they're running a similar style of system, but again, you don't really know until they get together. So it's a real challenge for them to try and embrace that and then try and get some kind of semblance of structure that goes along. And as we've seen as the day goes on, they start off okay and then it just kind of drops off a little bit as they get a bit fatigued. But yeah, it's tough for them.
Yeah. So how do you go about picking a team then? So it's, I mean, this is what, your fourth nationals, fifth nationals?
I think fifth nationals as...
There was a COVID run in there.
COVID run, I got a couple that we didn't go to. So third one I've gone in, I've been involved. Yep. I think it's my 10th overall tour of duty.
But due for long service leave.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's a great question. It's, I think, a collective knowledge of the group is really important before you come into today. So I think some people think, oh, we're just picking off a two games and a training session today. That's not the case. We try to get a really good understanding of the group for the whole, I suppose, build-up for the year, the SCC, the Cup, our All-State camps. We're talking to coaches, our HP coaches that are at all the hubs. So you get a bit of an idea of what you think the makeup will be from there. And then it's a matter of getting the jigsaw right. And sometimes it's a tough jigsaw to do, depending on what you've got on the table.
Yeah, and I mean, even just, you say, the cohesion side of things, like you put in an offense this morning in about 10 minutes to try and get some form of this is what we might look like and the shape and the style and all those types of things. And then players just sort of break out of it and they do their own thing and you sort of hope that it looks like basketball and you know at times it won't. But how do you assess players against each other in that space? Like, that's probably the hardest part because I'm sure people will see the team list and not that I want to cast any dispersions on you, they'll probably disagree with something. Like, it just happens that way. How do you make that assessment on athletes?
Well, it's a reality of the job that we're in. We're always going to get people who will disagree and who probably won't make it, won't agree with what we're talking about. But I suppose we look at how we can cobble a team together and how it will look. And if you see some glimpses of maybe an action within our offense and you think, oh, that particular group of players would look really good in that action, that'd be awesome. And then we are probably, I suppose the other thing people look at, like the guards are up against the guards and maybe the wigs against the wings and the bigs against the bigs. And there's a bit of overlap, I suppose, as well. But sometimes people might go, oh, how did they miss out? But they're really probably the fifth or sixth best guard, but they're comparing them against the bigs or some other wings. So, yeah, I get how hard it is to sort of sometimes make head or tail of what's going on. And I am first to say sometimes it's not always something we get right first up. It does take a little bit of time and you hope the group comes together.
Yep. Have there been players in your experience play themselves into the team on this combine weekend, or have you always been fairly... this is what it's going to look like as you come into it?
I suppose the groups that I've been involved with, we've been pretty lucky that we've had a probably a good core group who you kind of think they probably don't change too much. But there's always a bit of one or two that you go, wow, actually I can see where they can fit into the group and I can see the potential they might have. And they're the ones that we often call the green bananas or one of those ones. Very rarely do you get someone, I think, who's well known to you who just balls out that you're not aware of. I think that's sometimes even a bit dangerous if someone who hasn't done anything for a long, long time and just has a one-off game and they jump into a squad because it's probably not their what they're used to.
And that's where that data collection in the things we have prior to this become really important. So things like our SDP trials, our intro camps, and then obviously Cup and SCC.
All-State the other weekend as well.
Yeah, we make sure that we're collecting data at all of those things. Matt and his group will always, you know, do the old, if you had to pick a team today to go away tomorrow, who would it be? Just so then you don't get caught in that recency bias of somebody coming out and having a game out and you go, wow, I want to pick them. And it's like, hang on, they haven't been in the team at all until that one game. So that then just helps. They still might make it, you never know, but it just helps spark that conversation about, you know, what is the body of work? What have they done to this point?
It's a unique situation having both of you in the room to talk about this. How have you two managed your opinions on this? Because I'm sure both of you have different opinions on what the team should look like, and eventually you will come to a middle point where it's like, yeah, we're both comfortable with this. How have you both gone about this?
Rob, you should know we disagree with Zoe by now. That's exactly
All too well, it turns out, Matt.
Now, what I really like about our working relationship is that we can talk through a lot of things. Like we might disagree a little bit, we can generally talk through and find a common ground or have respect for each other's opinions, which is really nice, because I'm sure Zoe could just say, no, that's what we're going with and you're just going to coach it.
Yeah, we've got a new vacuum cleaner in our house at the moment and that's pretty much how it came about. Zoe said, we're getting this new vacuum cleaner. I just said, okay, and here we are.
I know it well, Rob. sounds like me getting miniature animals at some point, yes. No, but it is great. But I did say to Zoe at one point, look, on some points I'd rather say, hey, here's a team that you've got to coach and I'll find a way to coach the squad. I think that's also got some value to it as well.
Takes pressure off. I didn't pick it. Like, I'm just coaching what's in front of me.
The feedback has to come from me and not Matt. So I think But I think the point that's the most important there is that respect. So, you know, at the end of the day, I've given Matt a job. His job is to coach this team. If I hand him a team he's not comfortable with, I'm hindering his job. So it's one of the things that I don't allow any of my coaches to do, which is say, oh, there's just something about this kid. There's an X factor. That's all vague. So if I'm going to go to Matt and disagree, and similar to Matt to me, we know we have to come with an actual point, something that's a point of difference of something, or hey, watch her on this next possession. This is going to happen. This is what I like, or maybe don't like, and we then watch that together. We discuss it, but the biggest part of it is just respecting each other and understanding of we're both in this. Like, I'm in this. I want to give Matt the best team possible because I want him to succeed, and he also wants to do the best thing for the program, which sometimes is that one of those green bananas get picked. And, you know, it sets the world on fire. But at the end of the day, yes, we're in it to win, but there is also an eye on the long term as well.
I mean, you've kind of hit on it a little bit there. Is there any thought that goes into top age, bottom age when selecting these teams? Or is it just, no, this is the team we need to pick and this is how we need to go about it? Does age matter at all, I suppose, on your end, mate?
Well, I suppose it sounds like I'm going to be the sit on the fence kind of action again.
This is Coops 101.
I was going to say I'm trying not to channel my inner Coops here, but it is something that you do need to take into account. And even I know in some of the discussions we've had more recently is we're developing the program, so you do have an eye on the future. And then you're also looking to see, now you've been to, and I've been to a number of nationals, the kids that can stand up, and can a bottom age kid who's got a little bit of moxie about them be that person who can do it? Or are they going to be someone who you've got to set them up for success? They go into their shell, they really have a horrible week because they're probably not quite ready for it. And I'm really cognizant of that as well, because you don't want to send a kid there who's got high hopes and they have a horrible experience and they drop out of the game. But if you give them another 12 months and they develop and you maybe take them through an emergency, and then all of a sudden when they hit the floor, they're ready for it. Yep. So again, it's a tough one.
Yeah, so what do you do with your emergencies once you've picked them? Like, are they just treated exactly the same as the kids in the team, just that they don't get to go?
I really make a strong emphasis on that, is that we will bat 16, 17 deep up until that point. The only thing that you guys don't get to do is go to Nationals. I know it's a big part of it, but like we saw last year, we unfortunately had poor old Indy Schwartz did a knee, and we had to bring someone in from the emergency group with, I think, 3 weeks to go. And it was a really tough decision because our emergencies were so immersed in our system, they'd done so well that it became a real challenge to work out who would come in, and we could have taken any one of the six or seven who were there. It was a good problem to have.
And it's a bit of an emotional roller coaster, I think, for you and the players. Like, you both go through it. Like, you don't... Like, it's hard enough to pick a team once, let alone having to pick it twice when an emergency goes down. And I'm going to break someone's heart again. Like, but this is kind of the space we're in too. It's just not an easy world to live in, unfortunately, with state teams. But that's kind of the beauty of it too.
It is, and we'll talk about, like, today, for instance. Like, I love combine. And again, like, generally, as a general country, has a bit of a tough gig at combine because we know we sort of spread pretty thin. But you just start to see those glimpses. You get to see the kids who are selected on the day, their joy and their love for the game. But then the bitter part of it is some kids whose hearts are going to be broken. And I hope that people don't think we sit back here and think, oh, great, they're just going to, bad luck to them. Like, it's actually tough. And I know Zoe has the same feeling as I do. And all our coaching staff, like, we hate that part of it. It's rough. It's part of our job and what we do, but it is rough. You can't make any hide behind it.
Do you have any sort of, I suppose, stress or anxiety about actually naming the team? Like, is that something that you genuinely have to put some time and thought into announcing it?
I've gotten better, Rob. Like, it's sort of like the very first time I think we went, because I've been around for a while, we went from a way where we would email or we wouldn't do it on the day. But I think the very first time we did it on the day, I actually voiced pretty strongly to say, I don't think this is a great idea. I think we should probably not do it. But in now, having lived it a few times, I'm much more comfortable with it. But yeah, there's nothing worse than looking, like the parents I'm not too stressed about. I'm like, look, they're big enough that they can look after themselves. But it's seeing some of those kids who are pretty much on the line and they're in tears afterwards and they're still thanking you for what you've done for them. And you're like, oh man, this is straight through the heart. So yeah, that is the stressful part of it. But I'm thankfully getting better at it.
Just in time.
It's one of those things that you genuinely feel for the kids because you know how much they put into it. Like, and we all talk about it as coaches. We know that we attend a lot of coaching clinics and courses and sessions and all that sort of stuff. We don't do any of that without athletes. So we see the work they put in. You might have players that you've worked with for years, potentially. Like, if you've had someone come from your town or your sub hub or whatever the case may be, that's just so much time to go into them to literally break their heart because they think their world ends. Yep. Essentially, they miss a 16 state team. They're no longer going to be a basketballer.
I've been really, I suppose, making sure that I'm touching base with those kids that you know they're really heartbroken and just trying to get them to understand that it's not an end of the pathway, it's just that it's not your time yet. Everybody has a very different pathway to get to where they're going to get to, and it just means that if you aren't upset, it probably means you don't care. So the fact that you are upset means that you care, so that's great. And now let's work a way to get you to where you need to get to. And it just might be a different pathway to someone else who's maybe made the squad or maybe hasn't. And we've all seen examples, like, because I've been in the under 16 space for so long, like kids who make an 18s who have never made a 16s all the way through, or make a 20s and then they're going to college, or someone who's never made anything all the way through and then makes it into a professional league. Like, that happens more often than you probably think. So you just got to reiterate that and make sure they understand that.
Yeah, definitely. It's one thing that really can't be undersold or understated is the amount of additional work that has to go in from country athletes. Like, it's, you know, we're obviously at State Basketball Center today. For some of these kids, it's literally a 5-minute drive. For a lot of the others, like, that's a fair load to put on the family to commit to this sort of thing.
Absolutely. Like, I think country athletes are kind of, they're almost used to it, so it becomes something they don't kind of think about it as much. But we've got to be really aware of it, like just the amount of travel. They'll probably spend more time on the road than they will on the court. Yep. Is the reality of it. I know we try and sell it when we get to that state level. That's probably our point of difference. Let's try and embrace it and use it to our advantage and hopefully have a really highly connected team that enjoys each other's company and everything like that. But there's no getting away from it. It's tough for some of the travel.
Well, and time, financial, all that sort of stuff. Like, it all adds up. Like, you can't just grab a two-hour training session somewhere, because a two-hour training session is a three-and-a-half-hour travel in, two-hour training session, three-and-a-half-hour travel out. That's a fair slog on everyone.
Yeah, and you add into that, what we're doing isn't the only thing they're doing. So they may be at a country tournament one weekend, and then they're with us, and then they're, you know, with their clubs or schools or whatever else it is. If it was just us, then it probably changes things a little bit. But they have so much more going on in their calendars, and trying to fit all of that in from a workload perspective, but to then to also make sure we're getting done what we need to get done, is really, really tricky.
Yep. I'm just looking at the whiteboard over here. I'm not naming off any names, but you've got about 14 different teams written up there as to which way it could potentially go. Are there any, say, tools that you would use to have a look at this, or are you one of those visual people that needs to see teams mapped out in front of you so that I know what this is going to look like and here's where it might swing and change?
I'm very, very organised like that. Probably Zoe gets sick of me sending her emails coming all the way through with the way I plan things. I'm very much visual. I like to see it. One of the things that Zoe's been very good at challenging us is when we sort of might have a team in mind. It's like, okay, well, who's your pace component? Who's your poise component? Can you lock down a team with these defensive ones? So then you can sort of start to pull some people out of that team and go, oh, I like the look of that on the court. And that's kind of a really nice way to try and visualise things and see how they're going to look together. So that's sort of been pretty helpful.
Yep, excellent. And same sort of deal with your assistant coaches. How do you manage their opinions? Like, I know you spoke about respect before, but there's obviously a vast difference in experience from your end compared to your assistant coaches and things like that. If you ever get to a point where they say one thing, you say another, how does that go on your end?
Why are you looking at me?
No,
I know why.
No, they're just
playing. They get told we start in here, or we started in here at the start of the day, and it was, you know, we want to hear your ideas and your thoughts. And at the end of the day, though, Matt's the head coach and he needs to be comfortable. So even if the two of you disagree with Matt, then Matt gets to make the final call. It's just the way it is. It's part and parcel with being the head coach, because, as I said, he's the one that has to coach it, and it's the same courtesy we would afford when it's their time to step into the role, you know, the same courtesy we would afford them as well. It might sound a little bit confronting or, you know, maybe a bit forward, but at the end of the day, that's the way it has to be. And what Matt does really well is creates a really inclusive environment, to the point where even if they do disagree, nobody's walking out disgruntled. Like, it's not a fight. It's not, you know, it is always just a professional discussion. And then at the end of the day, if he has to make the call, he has to make it.
I think it's really important that you don't just have yes people around, because I know I've been in situations where that happens and you're like, yeah, I just throw something at me that's different, because I think you need to have that provocation, that discussion to help your thought process get through it. So I think that's really important, and I think our assistants and our staff have been very good at that. But they also are now probably have had that point where they can give their opinion freely. They don't feel like they have to hold back. But then once we've had, it's the old one, you debate, you align, and then you go out here as a collective, as a group, and we kept that all in-house of the debate we had. We might have had some ripper discussions, but once we leave the door, we've made a decision, that's it.
Well, it's a little bit speak now or forever hold your peace. I don't want to hear from you Sunday and say, oh, actually, maybe we should have thought about this. No, sorry, like, yeah, too late. Like, give me everything you possibly can. And then it's your job to filter through, you know, what you want, what you want.
And it's also very well understood that no problem, we want to hear. If you want a challenge, that's fine. But that's got to be a challenge with substance, like what we were talking about before. Not just, I think she should be in. Why? Oh, because I like her. I'm sorry, that's not good enough. Like, it's got to be, what is her point of difference? Why should she be in? Who comes out because of her? And how does that change our life? Like, there's got to be levels of thought into that, rather than just, oh, this is what I think.
Yeah, and it's difficult to do that, because you obviously go in with a level of bias, depending on what you've seen them do, you know, if you've potentially coached them or coached against them at some stage, they've had a blinder against you, and it's like, yeah, that kid's fantastic. But then you walk in and it's like, oh, actually, no, they're not in this, like, or they just don't fit. I mean, how do you deal with that? And I'm certainly not suggesting anything, Matt, like there's no problem here. You're not a biased coach, I get that. But how do you manage that on your end too? Because like you're a part of a smaller country association. You obviously have a lot of connection with kids that come through that area. How do you not favour them but also not go against them so heavily?
It's a really good question because I feel like if I like, talk about my biases, they're probably more I go against them because if you coach kids a lot, you tend to see a lot of their negatives more than their positives. So because you know where that what you're trying to improve and what you're trying to get better for them. So it is something that you have to be – I think awareness of it is the main thing. If you're aware of it and you understand it and then you can process it a bit, that makes a huge difference. I think it's if you've absolutely got no idea that you've got the biases there, that's probably more of an issue. But I feel like we do a good job. And now all of our staff, like you said, they come from smaller country towns. And look, sometimes it's an advantage because you can say to someone, hey, what have you seen them do? Because it looks like they didn't have a great day today. And then they go, well, actually, yeah, they're a little bit off or this has happened or where they can fit in. So sometimes it's really helpful as well.
Yep. I can vouch for that bias going the against way because there's an athlete out there right now that Matt was going to leave from the region. I'm not going to say where, but just the region where we had a discussion and I said, no thanks, she's coming. And again, but that's that respect thing as well. And you know, we had that. I think we even had that conversation of, hey, don't just not bring her here because of how it may be perceived or how it may look or anything like that. Just, you know, I think she deserves to be here. Do you think she deserves or, you know, even half deserves to be here? Yes. Okay. Let's bring her. And because that, yeah, you can get stuck. As Matt said, it's really easy to get stuck going the other way, worrying about how it looks from the outside.
Absolutely. Last question before we let you jump back into how important is the level of confidentiality when you go into these selection meetings? Because realistically, there's a lot of very frank discussions that have to happen and you have to speak your mind in these sort of spaces. How important, and I mean, do you reiterate anything with the coaching staff about what goes on in a room and then what gets, you know, put out into the world, I suppose?
It's incredibly important so you can have that freedom of speech and freedom to discuss going through. And look, we've all been in situations where sometimes that probably hasn't happened to the level that we would expect it to, and it's really difficult to deal with after that. Yeah. So it creates a lot more of that ripple effect, and it could be something as simple like as someone just makes a passing comment, and it's not in any way like oh, here's what they said and here's what we were thinking. It's just a passing comment and that ripples back and all of a sudden you've got World War III down in some association because someone accidentally said something.
Or was trying to make them feel better.
Yes.
Like they were exactly. Just trying to make them feel better by saying something or giving them something, but it's not aligned with either the feedback or, you know, those sort of things, and it just causes so much trouble.
Yeah, I think it's something that thankfully the last few times I've been involved, we're getting much better at that, and it hasn't been a huge issue.
No, exactly. It is, yeah, but it is hard. Like, I mean, any selection is obviously going to have different opinions and those types of things, and you do have to be able to talk freely. But that does wrap us up. Matt, thanks very much for jumping in. I know it's a flat-out day for you as well, and these things are never easy, but it is a really hard thing to go through. And I mean, it's great that you've been involved in the program for so long and you're sort of becoming more comfortable with it as you go on. And good luck when you go to national champs.
Thank you very much, Rob. Appreciate it.
The plan is flawless. The stakes are high. The only problem? It's for 3 days only at City Mazda's Trilogy Sale Event. With three deals across 3 days, get a steal of a drive-away deal on the entire new and demo Mazda range. Make your move. City Mazda's Trilogy Sale Event is on now. Get in, get out, get Zoom Zoom. Love my city, love my City Mazda. Conditions apply. LMCT 11621.
That does wrap us up for the podcast this week. A massive thanks to Dom Lanotti and Matt Holmes that have both jumped into the pod. They have got a mountain of work going on today as it is to be able to jump in and give us a little bit of insight as to what goes on when the under 16 combine comes around is really valuable. I know we're a little way off selection at say club level and things like that, but I think it's a really good thing to be able to maybe dispel a few myths or simply just provide a little bit more understanding of what goes on in selection meetings and and what goes into picking a team. It's really easy from the outside to say, well, I would have picked this, and that's fine. There's no problem with that. But the coaches that are put in charge of these teams do put a lot of time and effort into it. So it's one of those things that I understand. It's difficult for people to hear and see sometimes, but it is an area that they take really seriously, and there's a great deal of professionalism that goes into it. So that does wrap us up from the under 16 state combine. That wraps us up for the week. Thanks very much for listening in, everyone, and we will catch you all next week on the Talking Split podcast.